And it's the one where they're like, there's missiles and helicopters everywhere, and he goes by and he's holding on to a helicopter like this.
It's so boring. It's like,
and it's on the, it's so boring. And then it cuts to them like, hey, thanks, guys.
No, it's fine.
Hello.
Oh, howdy.
Welcome to Out of Dodge,
a podcast hosted by us, two film school graduates. I am Trevor.
And I am Shane.
And what we do on this podcast is we talk about stuff. We talk about entertainment, things that make us happy, things that make us real mad. And today we're probably talking about the latter.
Yes. So today we thought we'd talk about movie sequels and how many of them are bad. For example, we're just going to get right into it.
It's been a minute since this movie came out because I didn't watch it. Not that I didn't want to. So we're going to talk about, at first, Wonder Woman 84 or Wonder Woman 1984, as it's commonly known. Came out Christmas Day on HBO Max.
HBO Max has a lot of movies coming, and Wonder Woman 84 was kind of supposed to be their huge start.
The reception has been a little murky. We have a lot of people saying this was the worst thing since Suicide Squad, which I think is unfair.
Didn't Justice League happen after Suicide Squad?
Yes, it did. It did. And then you have a lot of people saying that this is really good.
No.
I also want to start, first off, by saying... Shane and I come from a certain privilege of sorts, and I feel like sometimes it comes across as two men, two boys, kind of dogging on something made by a lot of women, starring a lot of women, and I don't want that to be the case. I don't want it to come off as that.
Yes, I think that's fair to say. I went into this movie really wanting to like it. I want to go on record that I think the first Wonder Woman is, like, phenomenal and really fun.
It's really good.
It has a very... It manages to have, like, a really fun, lighthearted attitude while also being about war and war crimes and death and action. The action in the first one is, like, fantastic.
So good.
Like, No Man's Land.
The part,
yeah.
The part in the town.
Yeah.
Where they're, like, liberating it and they're, like... throw her into the clock tower and she's like
fucking awesome. It's
so
fucking
good.
Great. That being said, I wanted Wonder Woman 84 to be good. I wanted it to be great. I wanted to have a great time. I did not have a good time. I had a bad time.
Here's the thing. I know I rag on literally everything we talk about, and I say I hate movies all the time, and then I hate TV shows, and I hate entertainment. Which is a lie. I do really like stuff, and I really want things to be good, because I don't want to spend 2 hours and 31 minutes watching something that I, like, don't like. I want it to be fun. I want it to have a good time. I want everyone attached to a project to feel a sense of pride and accomplishment for having made something that's great, that's huge, right? This was, like, just such a mess, and I feel like it squandered so much goodwill that...
Yeah.
The first film had garnered, it felt like such a weird follow-up to a film that was, like, very confident.
The first movie, which had really good world building and really exciting action scenes, and was paced pretty well despite being kind of long, this movie lost all of those things because the world building is boring. The pacing is appalling.
Non-existent.
And the action, save for maybe like a 2-minute hallway fight, is just garbage.
It could be the Waterworld stunt show, right?
Sure.
Which I'm going to say maybe this had a play in it. But everything's like... The CGI is so wonky.
The CGI is a little bit off. I'm going to be honest. Like, there's a lot of swinging around scenes that just don't quite look
finished.
Everything
looks really rubbery. And you know, that's kind of just... I've never been blown away by the CGI in DC films. It always, you know, looks super bad, to say the least. Like, in Justice League, it looks like garbage. It's weird because they set up a really colorful world. Because the last one, you know, a war film, everything was kind of muted. Everything was kind of, like, dark blues and grays and stuff like that. You know, they were like, we're going to ditch this ditch that like aesthetic for like a really vibrant 80s feel, you know, retro colors. And it's just the weirdest thing was like half the action sequences are monocolor, where it's like, here, do you like the color of the desert? That's it. And then there's Wonder Woman jumping around. She's the only spot of color in this whole scene. Or, look, it's a cheetah and Wonder Woman. Can you really tell what's going on? Not really. It's kind of dusky out, so it's too dark. And on this island with a satellite, there's no lights, so, you know.
It's TV Island. I have a lot to say about TV Island, but we'll get there.
Yeah. Jesus. So, should we kind of break down the plot points?
Yeah, I feel like you have a lot that you want to say about the opening 15 minutes or so I'm going to let you add it.
So it starts off with a monologue of Diana. She's like, ah, my childhood. And then it cuts to her on Themyscira when she's a child and she's doing this gauntlet. And I was like, oh, they're going to do like, you know, show her like starting it. And then it's going to cut to her like as an adult, you know, running. And it's like, oh, look, the things she learned as a child are like mirrored as her as an adult. They do that eventually, but it takes like 15 minutes for us to get there, and they show the whole like Olympic games that she's attached to. Like, she's like doing this running, this triathlon sort of thing, where there's like a American Ninja Warrior section, a swimming section, which, you know, whatever, and there's a horseback riding section where they have to shoot bows, and it goes on for so goddamn long, and it's absolutely nothing. It doesn't come up again.
Compared to the training in like the first one, which actually moved the plot along, but it was also fun because it's like, oh, people fighting. It's just stupid.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't care. Like, there are a lot of superhero movies that'll be like, obviously you open with an action set piece. Like, you gotta start on it like a bang, like a big showy thing. And they're like, we're gonna have like little flares, I guess, that are blue, and then they're running horses. What?
If it was my cut, I'd just cut the first 15 minutes.
I'd like to talk about my first feeling of dread. Not in real life, but in this film. There's a decent mall fight. And I say decent because it's not great, but the idea is there. Where like a bunch of robbers try to steal ancient artifacts hidden behind a jewel shop in a mall. It's a hell of a sentence, but it's a hell of a film. The robbers are there. They have guns. Things are getting dicey. Wonder Woman shows up. She takes out the cameras. And I don't really believe in this, because the idea to support the worst films in the DC universe is that Wonder Woman's kind of like rogue and no one knows who she is. I'm like, I call bullshit on that. How do you not know who that is? Like, it doesn't. It's stupid. I'm gonna cut
this
part.
She's like existed. No. Keep it. She's like existed for like 100 years.
You're not gonna forget Wonder Woman. You know what I mean?
But that's also not how cameras work.
She beats up the dude. She saves the day. A museum like takes all the artifacts that were there because they were like black market kind of stuff. Mm. And then turns out that Wonder Woman, Diana, works for the museum in like artifacts and stuff. And I think that makes a lot of sense, considering she's kind of immortal and probably picked up a few things over the ages. One of the artifacts is this rock, right? They're like, oh, this looks a lot like this wishing rock from this civilization. As somebody picks it up and they're like, man, I really wish I had a coffee. And then somebody shows up and is like, oh, I have this extra coffee. And part of me is like, that's a funny bit. But then the dread came. The dread that this movie's MacGuffin and the reason that we are fighting is because of a magical stone. You know how the first one's about, like, fighting imperialism in the God of War? This is about rock!
In the first film, the stakes were, like, clearly defined and real and tangible. And you can see the effects of them on the world. In this one, it's very nebulous.
Later in the movie, you find out that the rock was created by, like, a trickster god or something. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, so we're going to fight the god, right? No?
No.
And I'm like, okay. I guess in the first Wonder Woman, they're like, all the gods were killed by the god of war. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense, I guess, narratively. But at the same time, like, who is she going to fight? She's a god killer.
We have to talk about Barbara.
Yeah.
Minerva. You know, a human name. We meet this Kristen Wiig, this kind of a ditzy woman who can't walk in heels. She's described in older reviews as a wallflower. And I'm like, okay, I don't know really what that is. But there's perks to being one, I'm assuming. She's like really smart, but, you know, everyone kind of forgets about her. even her boss is like, oh, it's good to meet you. And she's like, you hired me like 3 weeks ago, dude. She gets the rock from the FBI to like, you know, study it and just figure out where it came from. And Diana's like, yo, we should be friends because I need this rock. And so essentially that's why they hang out and they have lunch once and become best friends. And then it, like, you know how scenes will cut to the middle of like an action, establishing that there was a beginning to the scene that we just didn't see. It cuts to them laughing and Diana's like, Barbara, you're so funny. And I'm like, no, this is bad. This is bad. Cause what did she say? You know, we don't know. The screenwriters don't know. She becomes a character that we follow and we realize, you know, she wants more than what she has. And life's kind of given her a bad hand because she's a good person at the heart, but she's kind of ostracized from the world because she's not traditionally beautiful, which I would beg to differ. The film's like, look how nerdy and ugly she is. And I'm like, no, that's not true,
but
though.
But they gave her glasses. She stumbles sometimes.
And then we meet the villain of the film, Maxwell Lord. He just wants money. He wants to be the number one oilman.
He's in like an oil tycoon.
And he knows about magic.
He knows about magic. I don't know how. They don't explain that. And he wants the rock.
They slowly realize that it's a wishing rock.
Yes.
And like, Kristen Wiig or hands it to Diana and she's like, what would you wish for? And Diana's like, I know what I would wish for, and doesn't say it.
But we know it. She wants her old boyfriend back.
The one that died 60 years ago. And then later, Kristen Wiig's like, God, I wish I was strong and pretty and like sexy as like Diana Wonder Woman.
She says as Diana, but she doesn't know Diana's Wonder Woman, but she gets the powers and she's like, whoa, what a coincidence.
So she gets real strong. Yeah. That's like a later thing. But anyway, suddenly everyone's like, oh my God, she's pretty.
She can walk and in so heels.
She can walk in heels. And that's part of Wonder Woman's power is equilibrium. And so everyone starts taking notice of her suddenly because, you know, she has magic telling them that she's pretty. She meets Mr. Lord, who's like, suddenly falls in love with her. And he's like, hey, give me that rock. And she's like, no, no, no.
Not without a kiss. And I'm like, what is this film? And they make out.
It's weird because, like, they 100% bone, I'm sure.
And then he takes the rock.
But he takes the rock, like sneakily. And then later she's like, yeah, I let him borrow the rock. I'm like, you knew this whole time? He essentially makes a wish to become the wishing rock.
Because then,
which is an insane thing.
Because then he can give somebody whatever they want, but then he gets to take something of theirs because that's how the rock works. You might think this is a bad thing to build a whole film around, and you're right.
Could he just been like, I want to be the richest person that could ever exist?
And then then the rock would have taken something from him, and he's trying what, to
what could he take? What could the rock take that the infinite riches of the earth could not give him? What if he was like, I want to be God?
But all the gods are dead except for they're all dead.
No, they're not, because it's Mr. Moneybags. God of Moneybags and special rocks.
He's trying to become more powerful just to be more powerful, and he's trying to become richer to be richer. There's just no real reason for anything that happens in this movie at all. It just happens, and you see it, and then you stop, and you're like, fuck, man.
Yeah. I also feel like we shouldn't do a play-by-play, because that will take us all day.
Yeah, you're right. Let's just complain about it.
So Steve Trevor comes back in the weirdest way possible. So she makes a wish on the wishing rock.
Yes.
That Steve Trevor would come back.
She's at a party and then some dude rolls up and is like, Diana. And I'm like, who is this? This is not Chris Pine. And then he's like, I'm going to say the thing that I said when I died. And she's like, oh my God. It's just another dude. Mm-hmm. And then like she goes to his place and then we see him as Chris Pine, like, you know, source code trick. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, and she's like, all I see is you.
He's possessing a real person, a real human being. Mm-hmm. So the magic wishing rock couldn't just bring someone back from the dead, which would have been better and made more sense.
Which is weird, because later the wishing rock, like, conjures nukes out of the ether. But I'm like, can't bring a person back from the dead?
It's just, I just don't like it. Like, the ethics of it are weird, but also it's just silly. Like, I thought he was going to be a clone from the trailers, you know?
That'd
or
be
something
cool.
like that, because, you know, Maxwell Lord is usually a rich asshole.
Yeah.
I'm like, sure, that's something he could do. But no, it's even dumber than that.
Is it assault? Maybe.
It's definitely problematic. It's under that umbrella, for sure.
The thought would be, well, you know, maybe if it was a woman, we would be having a different conversation, you know?
It's just weird, especially because he comes back at the end. We're not talking in order anymore. So later in the movie, she has to, like, leave him,
mm-hmm.
leave her old boyfriend behind to discover her real power. So she has to abandon love to be strong.
Not just be strong.
She's,
like, physically deteriorating.
Well, it's because,
like, she's losing her powers because
the rock is like a monkey's paw, published in 1902. So basically, if you make a wish and get something, the rock takes something from you, so you have to suffer mm-hmm. a little bit. She starts losing her power the more sex she has with Chris Pine. So eventually she has to leave him behind in order to be powerful again, and they say goodbye, and it's, you know, it's a stupid scene, I don't know to tell you.
Yeah.
And then he disappears. And then later in the movie, like, toward the end, the dude who Chris Pine was possessing shows up and is like, hey, this tie looks stupid. And she's like, haha. And it kind of implies, oh, she'll move on and with other people. But I'm like, she technically had sex with that dude. So it's fucking weird, right? It's weird and bad.
It just feels gross. You know? Mr. Lord, Maxwell Lord, goes to Egypt.
Yeah, he has magic wish powers now.
What did you think of the whole Egypt?
Well, so...
That's also very problematic.
To briefly sum up the Middle Eastern bits in this film, awful. Mm-hmm. They very much imply that everyone there is either poor or evil or bloodthirsty. Bad, mm-hmm. which is bad. Mm-hmm. It's bad. There's one scene where there's a Middle Eastern soldier and he's like, all I want more than anything is more nukes. And I'm like, that's fucking...
Yep.
What? Why is this in this movie? I don't... What the fuck is that? Also, she uses a missile to save a bunch of kids from the road, which is historically not what happens with missiles. He makes a deal with this, like, Egyptian oil guy. And he's like, what do you want? And he's like, I want all the heathens gone from my land. And I'm like, why? That shouldn't be in here. What is what is happening?
It's like, ruh-roh.
On a much less, but still very strange note... There's a scene where, okay, so the whole world is infected by wish magic because Maxwell Lord takes over the TV island. That's this film. Everyone's making wishes around the world, and these two people are having an argument. And this woman is like, I wish all the Irish would go back where they came from. Horribly racist. Horribly racist.
She says,
and
Irish then, bastards, and I'm
and
like, oh no.
He's like, I wish you would just die. And the movie kind of implies that those things are on the same level. Like, being horribly racist and wanting to, like, relocate and ruin the lives of millions of people is the same as wanting a racist to die. And I'm like, no, I don't think so. Yeah,
because she immediately drops dead, and then the police start rounding up Irish people. And I'm just like, oh my god.
There's just a lot of racism in this film, and it doesn't need to be in there. It never needs to be in anything, obviously, but it's really surprising. That they centered so much of the movie on it.
I don't know. I feel like this might be reaching. But
sure.
So, Mr. Lord, that's not his real name. His real name's something else. But he's Latin American of some sort. They don't really go into that. But at one point, during the climax of the film, where they're not fighting, mind you, Diana's using the power of friendship and truth to be like, look, everybody, just be a good person. Say no to the dress, you know? Renounce your wishes, because look, it's real stinky out there, you know? It shows a flashback of Maxwell when he's a kid and his dad's just like hitting his mom and hitting him for like wetting the bed, and then all these people are like, ew, you're poor and different, and I'm just like, this feels racially motivated at some level, you know? It just feels icky at best.
There's just a lot of that feeling in this whole movie. Also, I don't know. There's so many mixed messages and bad messages in this film. And part of it is like, oh, if everyone really had what they wanted, they would be sad and life would be hard, which is something Republicans have been trying to trick us into since the dawn of time. It isn't true.
I feel like there's some wishes that are good. Like, hey, I don't want this terminal illness. I wish I didn't have it, you know? Like, that would be a good wish to have. I don't think you would want Wonder Woman to strong arm you into like not being healthy, you know.
So Kristen Wiig, who's Barbara?
Barbara Navern.
So because
Minerva
of because of the magic witch rock, she turns into a cheetah. You know, it's a good film. She turns into a cheetah monster and
cheetah monster.
Yeah, fights Wonder Woman and loses. It's Wonder Woman. And they're fighting on Magic TV Island, which can broadcast everywhere in the world, which is not something we can do at all. Not in 1984, at least. Maxwell Lord is screaming in a giant wish funnel.
Mm.
That sounds like not how it is, but that's how it is.
No, it is how it is.
And I'm like, oh, is he going to be strong and they're going to have to fight or something? And no, they just kind of talk for, I don't know, 10 minutes. It's like 10. It's so long. It's such a long scene.
Mm.
And she's like, everyone, you have to not have your wishes because the magic is ruining the earth in a way that doesn't really make sense and you can't visualize it. It doesn't look like anything's happening, but...
It's because, like, Russia and the U.S. are firing nukes at each other, because I guess that's what the presidents really want. Feels problematic.
It's inevitable that this would come up, but, so, Guardians is very 80s-influenced and, like, 70s-influenced, and they're like, we're going to use the music and the vibe. Wonder Woman is in 1984. The soundtrack is gone. There's nothing. There's, like, you don't... There's so little music and cheer to this at all. But also, they pitch the movie... So Wonder Woman is not bloodless, okay? In the first movie, she's a god killer. She slaughters German soldiers. So in this movie, there's kind of like a kill almost no one. I mean, because people are kind of brainwashed, I guess, which is boring because why? But she doesn't really fight that much or do that much. You know what I mean?
She, like, Wonder Woman's just, for probably like 4 minutes.
Yeah, like a collective 4 minutes in the whole
three
film.
Of those minutes are her just like flying through the sky. Because Steve Trevor was like, hey, here's something. You don't know how to fly? Stupid. It's easy. Just catch the wind. You know, the thing that's intangible.
In the trailer, when she was like riding lightning bolts, I'm like, this movie can't be bad. And it is.
The action sequences are just all over the place. I would say there's only a few sequences in general of the whole film that I thought were enjoyable.
The one part I want to say, there's like a hallway fight. Between
it's Secret Service because he's at the White House at that
point. But she
what a
and
fucking sentence.
Wonder Woman and her boyfriend are fighting in a hallway, and it's actually kind of great because they remembered fight choreography.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very reminiscent of like the first one, and like she's throwing people and she's blocking bullets, and people are getting knocked this way and that, and she's using the lasso to like block shit, and it's cool. But that's it, and it's so short for how long the movie is.
Yeah. And so something else that we have to mention, too, is that, like, so she gives up her unwillingly or unwittingly gives up her powers in order to have Steve Trevor back in her life, which, you know, is a weird message. But, like, so in that hallway scene, she is vulnerable, which is cool because we've seen her be like, bullets? I don't give a shit about bullets. Bullets mean nothing to me. And then now she's like, ow, I can get shot. This hurts a lot, actually. It's real bad. So that kind of adds a little bit more tension to the scene, but, you know, that's the only kind of bit where you're like, oh, things can actually happen to these characters now. But the whole giving up power and also, like, you have to pick one, you have to either be powerful or have a boyfriend. I don't know about that, Chief.
Yeah, I just don't love it, you know?
I mean, you can have both.
I might hate it, to be honest. Also, one really quick thing. So they have to get to Egypt to fight the bad guy. And Wonder Woman and her boyfriend Steve are like, what do we do? Let's steal a plane. Uh-huh. So they steal a plane. Uh-huh. And they're trying to take off from... They're in the middle of D.C. The military freaks out because there's a plane flying around in the air and they have no idea who's in it or where it's going. And Diana's like, oh, I forgot. Oops, silly me. I have cloaking power because Zeus could do it, so I can do it. And I did it once, and then she makes the plane invisible.
Mm-hmm.
And two things about this. Number one, the plane should have just had that as like a thing the plane could do, because that would have made more sense. Number two, if she has cloaking power, like if that's something that she can do even just sometimes, why not do it more often, maybe in combat scenario? Because that's camouflage. Yeah,
like do it to yourself.
Like, that is an insane ability to have and then forget about all the time.
There's a funny line, though. Because, first off, the dialogue.
Very stilted and strange.
Woofies. But the dialogue was funny in that scene because she's just like, yeah, I did it once to a coffee cup and then I lost it. And I was like, no, that's good.
Yeah, I'm like, that's funny. But then the rest of the movie is just like watching a headache unfold.
So after, here's my headache. After she makes the jet turn invisible, it like flies around and you see them like, you know, he's like, oh, I'm going to do a spin because that's a good trick. And it's, they show the exterior of the plane. It's invisible. You can't see it doing flips and shit. What's the point, man? God damn it. It's just like, why? I don't know why that makes me so upset. It
no,
really
by all
does.
Means, that's why we're here. I did write a close-up sentence, and this won't
Do
be
it.
A close-up sentence, but ultimately, Wonder Woman 84 is boring, racist, and nearly joyless. It is a total misfire in every possible sense of the word.
So, someone who would probably agree with you, Manila Dargis from the New York Times, in her review, she ends it with, in the end, this movie never makes the case for why Wonder Woman is back in action beyond the obvious commercial imperatives. It's a given that franchises are produced to make bank, etc. But the best chapters have life, personality, a reason for being, and fighting. They expand on their characters' mythologies, use the past to explore the present. 3 years ago, Wonder Woman emerged amid a reckoning of male abuse and power. The timing was coincidental, but it also made the character feel meaningful. In 2017, when Wonder Woman was done saving the world, her horizons seemed limitless. I didn't expect her next big adult battle to be at the mall. You can find their full review on New York Times, but that is woo-wee.
Phenomenal, and I completely agree. Something that was mentioned in the paragraph that you just read was kind
yes.
of like a reason for being.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like with a sequel, you do have to kind of justify your existence.
More like, than an original.
Yes. Because if it's an original concept, it's like, well, sure, we're going to see movies. But mm-hmm. if you're a sequel, like if you're coming back to the world, there has to be like an exciting reason that you're doing it. Why are we going back to this world? Why are we seeing these characters again? Are the stakes worse? Is something weird going on? Are we going to change the formula a little bit but keep the soul of the original?
This is not an original thought. This is a well-documented occurrence. But sequels, on average, tend to be darker than the original.
Yes.
You see things like The Empire Strikes Back, hell, the second Star Trek film, Into Darkness, literally in the title. You just see a lot of films be like, oh, we have to raise the stakes, which means shit has to get really bad for our characters. Which, sure, sometimes it works off. It works out, you know? Like, it works off. Sometimes it works out. The example of Empire Strikes Back. That is regarded as probably the best Star Wars film of all time. It takes the universe in a new direction, expands on what we've already known, and gives us really good interactions between characters that didn't get a lot of play together previously.
Star Trek Into Darkness does like the exact opposite, mostly because in the first new Star Trek 2009, the stake is the entire Earth will be destroyed by red matter or whatever because mm-hmm. of time travel shenanigans, which means not only can we play tribute to the original series, we can also chart our own course in these like a new series of films. It's very exciting.
Yeah.
The action is like pitch perfect. The characters are fun. The guy who plays Spock is just fucking great. And it's a lot of fun. And then in the second one, they're like, this guy hates London, I guess. He 9/11's London, which shouldn't be a plot point, but it is.
That's one example. Here's another one.
Great.
Mission Impossible 2. That's one that I would maybe say raises the stakes a little bit, but also kind of loses the essence of the original. Directed by John Woo, who is famous in kind of Asian Hong Kong cinema for doing action. Also a career that is also super all over the place. Not as consistent as you might think for someone who is kind of a legendary name. And it did not adapt, his style did not adapt well to Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
If we're talking about things getting a little bit darker, and I won't talk about this too much because it's an adaptation,
mm-hmm.
but Catching Fire, which is the sequel to The Hunger Games,
uh-huh.
takes it in a much darker, oh, we're all at war now and everyone's dying even worse than before direction, which I think worked really well. kind of counts, but kind of doesn't because it's part of a major franchise. But Captain America 2, the Winter Soldier, goes way darker because they take the entire organization that he works for and blow it up because it's full of Nazis. Secret Hydra agents want to eliminate almost all life on Earth with these giant mega kill ships. And I'm like, fucking terrifying team. They raise the stakes to like an incredible degree, but also obviously still have a man throwing around a giant shield at bad guys. So
Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Does both well, right? It makes it darker, raises the stakes a bit, but also makes it is like the best film in the series. Two Towers, I want to say. It's so good. The Battle of Helm's Deep, so good. A lot of people die. A lot of people die.
A lot of sequels that work, not necessarily darker, but that work really well. Obviously, Terminator 2, which is, that's not an original thought to say that at all. Aliens is also great, not an original thought.
Yeah, none of these are original, by the way.
None of these are original thoughts. All, you can buy these thoughts at the store right now. Dark Knight is great. Shrek 2, surprisingly solid. Like, they knocked that shit out of the park. Spider-Man 2, but the first Spider-Man 2, because technically there are three Spider-Man 2, and I hate that. But also love that at the same time.
Can you believe there's going to be two Spider-Man 3? Isn't that weird?
And then when Into the Spider-Verse has a sequel, then there's four Spider-Man 2.
There's four.
So let's flip to bad, you know? A lot of sequels do not justify their existence at all. Sometimes a movie will wait 10 years, even longer, to come out, and it'll come out and you'll go, I wish I hadn't waited for that. I wish I hadn't seen that at all. Two things that come to mind are probably The Incredibles 2. And Zombieland 2. Real empty experiences that they could have done anything with those. Didn't.
Damn. I saw Incredibles 2 in theaters, dude. I saw both Incredibles in theaters. One as a child and then one as like a 23-year-old man. that was really disappointing.
Incredibles 2 takes place like 5 minutes after the first one.
It does.
So even though it's been almost a decade, if not longer, the characters have gone through nothing more. And it's kind of, it's just boring. Because it's like, we're not getting anything new from these people.
And a lot of growth that happened during the first one suddenly, like, disappears.
Kind of regresses a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Incredibles 2 is, like, releasing into a climate where there have been 1,000 new superhero films. Mm-hmm. So they don't really do anything to differentiate themselves from what is already out there.
Well, it does in a way, because every action sequence is the same, because they're all chase sequences.
Oh, yeah.
They're all like trying to stop a big thing from hitting another thing. But she turns into a kite at one point, and then the movie gives kids seizures, so that's another thing.
I forgot that that happened. That was probably should have rethought that scene. Zombieland 2, Jesus. Also terrible. And that actually takes place 10 years later. There's one new character in Zombieland 2 who wants to be there, and you're like, cool. The writers don't. They're so not written. So even though it's a star-studded cast, and even though all those people have gone on to do huge things and win awards and whatever, it feels like they're undead. Train to Busan had a sequel that I don't recommend finding or thinking about ever. It's called Peninsula, and so the first movie is successful because it's really claustrophobic. Everyone's stuck on a train. There are zombies everywhere. And you might think, oh, if I'm making a sequel to this, maybe I'd put it on a boat or something like that, or maybe in a small town.
So you can call it Plane to Busan, and then it all
rhymes. I feel like, historically, planes go down so fast, though. And the movie actually opens up with, like, a zombie outbreak on a boat, and I'm like, cool. But then they pivot, and it's a heist film set in the city, and the CGI is unfinished, and nothing happens. Nothing happens. It's so weird and boring. 28 Weeks Later is also, dare I say, kind of similar. I'm not trying to talk about zombies only here, but a lot of zombie films.
Only zombies, you know?
A lot of zombie films, especially the best ones, are kind of a lightning in the bottle experience, and when they try to do it again, usually kind of a misfire.
Hangover 2.
Yeah, it's on my list too.
Yeah.
Dog shit.
Because it's just the first one, but in Asia for some reason.
And less funny and bad. Just
some could say the first one's not very funny either.
Maybe time was unkind, you know? I feel this way about Pitch Perfect, because everyone really liked the first one, and you're like, cool, okay, a cappella. We had to deal with the Cup song for about a year. But they were like, we're going to do more. And I'm like, are you going to do anything in those movies? And they said, no. I'm like, oh, that is a strategy, I guess. In the spirit of movies that had sequels that came out decades later and were absolutely terrible, Independence Day 2 was a thing.
Oh my god.
It was called Independence Day Resurgence. And here's something I want to say for the audience and to show off the things that I know. In Independence Day 1, there is a line of dialogue where somebody says, these aliens are like parasites and their entire civilization travels to worlds and then destroys them. Which means that the fleet that invaded Earth, that would have been it. That would have been all of their ships. They brought everything to us to fight us. And in the first Independence Day, we fucking destroy them. Which means hey, audience, they're gone. There can't be more of them.
This is just Trevor talking now. You don't know how many times I've heard Shane go on this rant.
The aliens come back, and the ship is so big it has its own gravity. And then we fight it, and it's just so underwhelming. And it's so... It just, I guess the first one works because they're committed to model building. You know what I mean? Like, they build a model of Los Angeles and New York, and then they burn those fuckers to the ground. And they're like, we're going to let you see it. And I'm like, great. And it still kind of holds up, even though it's kind of an older movie. And then in this, they're like, CGI is cool. And I'm like, it's not as cool as you think it is, team.
Speaking of CGI, that isn't as cool as you think it is. Pacific Rim 2.
Oh my god, I fucking forgot about that. That's... That movie was so disappointing because the first one was so good for no reason.
The first one I absolutely hated. There's one scene with the crab that I love.
I kind of love Pacific Rim. It kind of it grows on me every time.
I hate it.
Okay, so Pacific Rim 2, though.
Oh, it's terrible. It's stupid. There was a little bit of heart in the original Pacific Rim. And in this one, nothing happened. It's boring. It's stupid. No heart. Dummy boo-boo.
For me, Pacific Rim is very far from perfect, and a lot of the stuff in it doesn't make any sense at all. But there is some heart, even if kind of by accident, and some decent world building. So when they announced a sequel, I was like, okay, they're going to get another shot. Maybe they can use what works and get rid of what doesn't. But let me tell you, they do not. It doesn't make any sense. The robots are bad and also part monster, and also there's a giant monster that wants to detonate. Isn't it fucking Mount Fuji, which doesn't make it any goddamn Fuji. Sense? It's very bad. It's one of the absolute worst.
It's
the big conversation that we're having today is that a lot of movies that are really good will have sequels that completely miss the point and are bad. So Kingsman 2, Kingsman the Golden Circle, mind you, is one of the worst fucking things I've ever seen in my life, and also one of the worst sequels of all time. Because the plot of the first Kingsman is, like, just insane, genocidal cell phone bullshit, and heads are exploding, and the action scenes are honestly insanely good. And for the second one, they're like, something about bad weed, because the whiskey refinery wants to destroy weed, and that's the plot. And also, we have goo that makes your head regrow. But also, the fights are boring. Also, there are robot dogs. Also, there's, like... There's a scene that's very assaulty then there that they could have cut, but they don't. So
I haven't seen it.
It's dog shit. It's, like, absolutely reprehensible. Maybe the last one, I hope, that I bring up. Fantastic Beasts 2.
Fantastic Beasts. Oh, man.
Crimes of Grindelwald or whatever.
Oh, I forgot about the name.
The Harry Potter series came and went, you know, and that was the whole time. And they were like, we're going to do like a weird semi-prequel as its own series called Fantastic Beasts, and it's about little animals or whatever. The first film is one of those movies that kind of works by accident in spite of itself. You got little monsters. You also have this crazy cloud demon thing. And then you have a guy who's like stuck in the middle of it but trying to do the right thing. And it's like, that's great. And then the second one rolls around. And it's so convoluted and stupid, and all the action is bad, and all the characters make decisions that don't make any sense. And also nothing happens. And also Johnny Depp kills a baby in it.
Watch now on HBO Max.
Do not.
There was somebody that tweeted, like, your movie title might be dumb, but it might not be as dumb as The Crimes of Grindelwald or whatever, right? And, like, somehow, and this was someone that I know personally.
Okay.
I think it was someone from work. And, like, Harry Potter Twitter found that tweet, and it was just, like, blasting him. For tweeting that and being like, that's not a dumb name. That's just like, he's a super bad guy. It's not a dumb name. And I'm like, guys, come on. It's a dumb name.
I definitely want to go on record and say it's a dumb title to a very bad film. Ralph Wrecks the Internet.
Whoa, my God, I forgot. I saw that in theaters too. What
Ralph
the fuck?
Wrecks the Internet was incredibly underwhelming, and it was very strange. Again, I think Wreck-It Ralph was like successful by accident.
I feel like it was successful on purpose. It has a lot of heart.
They didn't expect it to do well, and then when it did well, they didn't know how to follow it up.
Yes.
That's what I mean to say. Because a lot of people put a lot of effort into the first one, and that clearly shows.
Second one, I feel like effort went in, but it feels very much like, hello, fellow youths. Grandpa's first meme, and then he's like, let's make it up. Screenplay.
On that wonderful note.
This is our only segment of the show, besides us incoherently ranting. This is called Middle Watch.
Yeah.
On Middle Watch, what we do is we watch an episode in the middle of a series run or whatever, right?
Sometimes we come in a little hot when we talk about these shows. But the point of this is not to be snarky, but it's just to kind of get a taste of everything. Because we can't watch everything, you know? But we want to see what's out there, have some laughs. Every once in a while, we enjoy a show. Most of the times, we don't. This week, we decided to hit up Merlin, which is a whole show. Season 3, episode 11, Sorcerer's Shadow. I don't really know why it's called that.
Same.
To be honest with you, that's a weird name to call it, but they went with that, so here we are.
It should be noted that this series has 6 seasons, and I don't think it got canceled. I think it like naturally concluded.
The episode opens. We have this little man, named Gilly, and he's very small. But he is walking toward Camelot, and he's like, I gotta compete in this huge tournament. With a sword, and he gets jumped by these two giant dudes who steal his sword and are like, fuck you for trying to compete. And he's like, but, and then he picks up a little ring, and then his eyes glow, and you're like, magic? Okay, that's wild. Then we cut to the castle, and Merlin is talking to his good friend Arthur. Spoiler alert, Arthur is going to be the king in the future. If you don't...
Yeah.
If you're surprised by this, that's how the legend goes. So
yeah, he's technically prince right now. His father, he's the current ruler, and I think he has a wife who's like a real jerk, but she's also like 400 years younger than him. So that's a whole thing.
I think she's hella evil. I think that's like a
twist. Think she's super evil.
She's super evil, but
it's not a twist. It's just obvious.
Merlin and Arthur are chatting, and Merlin's like, I don't know about this competition. It seems pretty crazy. It seems pretty dangerous to me. Like, all these people are coming out here to compete for 100 gold coins. And I'm like, that's it? You don't even get a cool sword or anything? It's just 100 gold coins. That does not seem worth getting skewered through the back for 100 gold coins.
It should be noted that later in the episode, you find out that the king has been, like, the champion every single time they've held this contest. And I'm like, I bet you, is this a Ponzi scheme? There's no 100 gold. There's never been 100 gold. He just wants to kill people.
Merlin's hanging out in a room, and those two bad guys show up from earlier, the dudes who jumped the little man, and are like, hey, shine my boots or whatever. And Merlin's like, I don't work for you. What are you talking about? And then Gilly shows up, little small guy with a sword and a ring, and he uses his magic ring to make a sword flip. And because it's the past, it doesn't look good. But he does a bunch of tricks, and then he chases them out, and Merlin's like, hey, that was pretty cool, and Gilly's like, that's me, and then he just kind of slinks away.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, I'm just a little boy. I'm here to murder.
Then we cut to family dinner time with Morgana, who's evil.
That's the most evil name I've ever heard.
So the king, whose name is like Uther or whatever, he's like, this competition is going to be pretty cool. And his son Arthur is like, I guess. And then Morgana's like, but you should compete, old man, who's the king. That would be pretty neat. And Arthur's like, don't do this. He's old. Don't make this happen. And she's like, I'm going to make it happen. They don't say this, but that's the conversation happening in the eyes. Like, the eyes do the talking in this scene. And you can tell that the king's like, I'm going to do it. And guess what? He does do it. Also, they mention the no weapons are banned in this competition, and there are no rules. And that, to me, seems reckless and dangerous, but whatever.
I can't believe King Arthur's using an AK-47.
Well, technically there are rules, and that's something I'm going to be touching on in a minute.
Well, it's more of a race rule, apparently.
Which I don't love.
No.
So, the fighting starts happening. At one point, a knight just punches a dude right in the face, and then dude collapses, so that's fun.
We see the kind of the bandit dude from earlier, like, very network television, but decapitate a knight in full chainmail, which I think is insane.
It is a little wild. Good old Gilly, who's like kind of like the main character of this episode, really.
Yeah.
Uses magic to beat a dude. And apparently he has this magic ring from the old religion. What does that mean? I don't know. And he... It's like a conduit. It's kind of like what Thor's hammer is in the sense that, like, that's not the source of your power, but it helps you utilize that power and direct it into specific things. Gilly tries to heal himself, but he's like, you know what I should do? I should do it in the middle of the hallway. And then a bunch of guards are like, what the fuck? And then he runs away. Apparently magic's illegal. So I didn't know that, but that's what it is. That's the situation. Magic's very illegal. The king hates it. If someone is caught doing magic, I guess they're executed. So Merlin's kind of worried.
Also Merlin's magic, obviously.
Merlin is like the most famous of the magics, I guess. And he's
but
like,
nobody knows yet because he's still a little
nobody
boy.
Nobody knows yet because it's early show, but also they don't have any money, so they're not. You're probably never going to see anything, maybe.
Yep.
Anyway, he tries to talk to Gilly. He's like, listen, this is a super dangerous thing. If they see you doing magic, they're going to kill you. And Gilly's like, yeah, it seems unfair. And I'm like, it kind of is unfair. And you find out that the ring comes from Gilly's dad, who died after getting, like, beaten up by a bunch of people because he couldn't use magic, because he was afraid of using magic, because if he used magic, the king would probably kill him and his son. And I'm like, oh, that's a little fucked up. I don't love that.
I thought this was going to be a sweet episode about a murder tournament, not about genocide.
Yeah, Gilly's like, I want to be proud of the power that I have, and I want to be able to do stuff. And I'm like, I guess that makes sense. Arthur talks to Merlin later. Everyone likes to talk a lot in this show, but stuff still happens, so I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
Arthur is doing well, and he's talking to Merlin, and he's like, I'm probably going to have to fight my dad, but I'm going to have to lose the match because then my dad will look like an asshole, even though he is an asshole, and he's a very bad person, just categorically. There's a dog barking in this scene. I just want to say this because I was watching the scene where they're talking, and in the background, you just hear, like, incoherent screaming and barking, and I paused the episode because I'm like, this isn't happening in the episode, surely. It is. I don't know if it was to imply that, like, everyone was drunk from the tournament, but it's just very weird. It's a very weird choice.
Super weird.
The magic guy keeps winning. Gilly keeps winning. It's
great. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, Gilly keeps winning. He starts moving up the ranks. I don't know how he's winning because it's very obviously he's using magic.
I don't know how people don't go, hey, was that magic? Everyone's like, no.
He's, like, throwing people around and stuff. Anyways, King Arthur and King... No. Prince Arthur.
Not spoilers.
Arthur and Uther. They fight, and you can tell that the king's having a real rough time.
He's
like,
old. And
he's
having,
super old. He's, you know, gonna get his ass beat by his son, who's doesn't look like he's, like, breathing hard at all or breaking a sweat or anything.
No, he's super calm during this. One thing that this is probably the best fight. No, not probably. This is the best fight in the show.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to say, for the record, that the sound effects are so, so fucking bad in the show.
Yeah.
Like, the clanging too loud.
Clang.
But also, when people fall over, it's like, ugh! And I'm like, what is this?
It also, like, cuts to people's reactions when there's any form of violence. Like, someone will get, like, hit, and then people go like, oh.
Father's doing bad. At a certain point, you can kind of see it in Arthur's eyes, where he's like, I'm going to have to lose because my father fucking sucks, and I'm too good of a person.
Mm-hmm.
And then the king wins and knocks him over, and everyone cheers, and it's like, okay. But then, because the king has won, it's going to be the final match. But guess who he's going to have to fight? Gilly, the magic boy.
He's going to kill the king.
Merlin tries one more time for a good old pep talk with Gilly. Because Merlin's biggest power is pep talk. Mm-hmm. And he's like, listen, they're going to kill you. You can't do this. It's too dangerous. And Gilly's like, fuck the king, though, you know? And I'm kind of like, is he wrong? Is he super wrong? Is he super wrong?
I mean,
he says, like, how many of our people, like, how many magic people has the king killed? And it kind of implies that the answer is too many, so many. And Merlin shows that he has fire, and it's like, I know what it's like to be magic and not be able to do magic, but we have to hope that the future will be better for us. Because Merlin's kind of playing the long game. He's like, I'm going to hang out with Arthur and be best friends with Arthur, so then when Arthur's in power, I can get that legislation passed.
It's the magic new deal. That's what they say.
Yeah. So tensions are hot. Gilly doesn't want to give up.
Gilly is, like, actually feeling like a real boy for the first time, because people are like, hey, you're not a little baby. You're a real boy who killed somebody. And he's like, I guess I am. And so that's why he's, like, not backing down.
Yeah, he
mentally,
feels empowered
he feels
the
empowered.
First time ever.
Yeah, which is kind of sad, but, you know. So Merlin, like, yells into the forest, and a dragon comes down. And he's like, why? What do you want from me, dude? And Merlin's like, hey, so I have this thing. Mr. Dragon. I need some help. I need some advice. This guy's trying to kill the king, and I keep telling him, no, don't do it. Don't you be fighting, little guy. And the dragon's like, you know, sometimes people gotta go. And, you know, hey, Arthur, he's gonna change the world once he's king, but he's not gonna do that if his dad's killed by a magic man. So maybe magic boy's gotta go.
Yeah, and I hate to agree with it, but I'm like, this dragon is talking sense.
Yeah, because I'm like, I hate to, because also that dragon's like the most pimply motherfucker I've ever seen.
The
scales are just bumps. It's
the dragon
so weird.
Is what they could afford, but he does very much look like a cutscene from a video game.
Yeah, like not a good one either.
Kind of like one of those Wizard 101 kind of things, like an online game.
Yeah, that just steals your credit card information.
We have to make credit card sacrifices for the good of magic.
So, anyways, goes to the next day, the tournament. King Uther, he's fighting a little magic man. Mm-hmm. And magic man's using some magic, and every time he does it, Merlin is like thwarting him on the sidelines using his own magic.
It's a fun little exchange where they keep blocking each other. And
yeah, and it looks at one point that little magic man's going to actually kill the king.
Magic man throws his sword into the shield of the king, and he's like trying to push it down, and the king is like, is this it? Am I dead?
Am I going to die to this pig farmer?
Merlin intervenes, and like the sword falls or the shield gets thrown, and eventually the king takes down the magic kid, but doesn't kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he holds the sword to the throat and is like, I did it, I did my job, I won. Merlin rolls back in for one more pep talk after the fight, because that's his ability.
Mm-hmm.
And Merlin's like, well, you tried to kill someone with magic, and that makes you bad. I don't love that it's season 3, so we've had, like, two and a half seasons of the king is somewhat evil and been killing magic people, and then it's like, we just gotta wait a little bit longer.
Maybe season 4.
But at the end of the episode, so we go, it's family dinner time again. The king looks at Arthur and is like, I know you threw the fight, and I'm really proud of you for doing that, because it meant a lot to me that I won. It was kind of my last thing that I could do. I'm pretty old, but it shows that you love and respect me and can make like good decisions based on people you care about. And he's like, I guess you're ready to be king. And I'm like, is that binding? Is next episode, are we going King Arthur? Like, are you just saying that because it's family dinner time? Like, even Morgana is like, I didn't expect, this is wild. She's like, now?
Yeah, I think.
I had season-long plans.
All in all, not a terrible episode. I'm sure there's worse ones, but that was a fun one.
I had a pretty good time. During Merlin's last pep talk, which I'm sure is what the name of the last episode is, Gilly kind of calms down a little bit and is like, I'm, you know, obviously still torn up about my father dying, but I'm going to try to be a good person. I'm going to try to embrace magic, but in a different way. I hope we cross paths again. And I was like, you know, I hope they do too, because that'd be a really cool thing to happen, like, maybe seasons later, if, like, he's just a little bit taller. And he's just, like, throwing people with magic. I'm like, that'd be fucking awesome. Can you fucking imagine how cool it would be if Gilly rolls in the last fight and is like, I'm here, motherfuckers. That would rule. I had a better time than I thought I would.
Honestly, me too. I was like, okay, this has some charm. This has some charm. I'm not going to watch anymore.
No,
but
there's a lot of shows that we'll watch that, like, 10 minutes in, I'll be like, this is so bad and I can't possibly watch this. But, like, I remember being halfway through the episode and being like, oh, there's still more of this? That's great. I never feel that with these, but
no,
I was
never.
Like, yeah, sure, bring it on.
I don't know what more to say about it. It's entertaining.
It definitely is, Merlin.
So some updates.
Yeah. There's something that I would like to talk about that I just learned about either yesterday or today. Netflix has launched a new salvo into the streaming wars. A bold move. They're going to have a new movie every week this year.
Insane.
They kind of need it, to be honest, because December, according to analytics, was very much dominated by Disney Plus and a certain Mandalorian TV show. Netflix kind of needs to get their mojo back. They kind of need to hit hard. They need to stay relevant. They have made good movies before, but they haven't quite committed to it in the way that they are doing right now. Like, this is a real commitment to movies. I don't think all of them will be good, but the star power in them is actually kind of impressive. Specifically, there's a movie called Don't Look Up, which is about two astronomers who try to warn the Earth because there's a deadly meteorite coming in 6 months. And it has Leonardo DiCaprio and Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Evans and Timothée Chalamet and Cate Blanchett. God. And Meryl Streep plays the fucking president.
That's literally my list of favorite people. And Timothy Chalamet. Just kidding.
Got him.
Oh, got him. No, he's great. I love him.
It's very exciting. There's also like a Fear Street trilogy, which is based on like the R.L. Stine books, which is like Goosebumps for older kids. And that's going to be like a camp slasher and murderers and witchcraft and shit. There's Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead. And so we have two Zack Snyder projects coming out this year. And the one that's going to be good is going to be this one, if any of them. Army of the Dead is about a Las Vegas zombie heist. So like Las Vegas is full of zombies. It's the end of the world. And we got to steal money from Vegas. Dave Bautista's in it. I don't really know anything about it, but there's potential because the one of the only good films Zack Snyder ever directed was Dawn of the Dead in 2004. So a return to form.
I feel like if Las Vegas has been taken over by zombies, we're kind of in a post-money world.
There's Red Notice, which is a heist film, I think, about art thieves, although I'm sure it'll be like a little meatier than that, because it's not super exciting to see somebody take a Picasso off the wall, so I'm sure people will get shot and killed or whatever. The Rock is in that, Gail Godot's in that, Ryan Reynolds is in that. There's also The Harder They Fall, which is like a Western revenge movie. It's got Idris Elba, Regina King, and everyone's favorite buff nerd from Lovecraft Country, Jonathan Majors.
God, he's so fucking buff. It's insane.
I think a lot of these movies have potential. And obviously, I can't list all of them because there are a literal fuck ton. Mm-hmm. But there's a good Variety article about it. And I think the future is pretty bright. So I think some of these will land pretty well.
In another future is bright news. EA, Electronic Arts, a gaming publisher, has lost exclusivity rights to the Star Wars brand for making video games. It was announced that a Ubisoft like open world game, Division style.
Yeah, it's the same engine that made Division, I think.
Yeah, is being tooled into a Star Wars game, which is, I'm like, okay.
Ubisoft kind of has a hit or miss track record with open world games.
It's been missed for me recently.
They definitely can make trees and buildings, but beyond that, I'm not 100% sure. But given that Star Wars is already like, is a brand that exists with characters that exist and like worlds and everything, I feel like maybe it'll be easier because they're taking something that already is real. I'm going to be optimistic even though they've kind of burned me in the past.
The good news is that EA is not the exclusive publisher of these games.
They made a point to say that the relationship with EA is not, like, ending. It's continuing. So yes. I feel like a sequel to Fallen Order is very much in the cards, as well as possibly a continuation for Squadrons, which I haven't played, and maybe a continuation for Battlefront. Although, like, where else do we have to fight? But I don't know.
I think they're not adding more things to Battlefront 2 right now. So there was a thing a while ago. Where they're like, yeah, we're just doing support now. We're not going to add any more content, which is kind of weird because the game had kind of a short shelf life. If you think of like online shooters, maybe like what, 3 years or something like that?
Well, the thing about Battlefront 2, and I'm going to try not to talk about it for a long time, but it's not going to be easy. The thing about Battlefront 2 is that the launch, at least of the multiplayer component of the game, was
real
super,
bad.
Super shaky. And I would argue that it definitely got better. I'm not good at it. Like, I'll say that on record. I'm very bad at it, but it definitely got smoother. They added new planets and characters and smoothed things out. I want to say that the campaign in Battlefront 2 is one of my favorite Star Wars things of all time. Like, it's just, you meet old characters and fight new battles and do all kinds of crazy shit. I expected absolutely nothing when they announced the campaign for that game, but I played it twice. I'll probably play it again. It just, like, completely got me. Completely by surprise. I am glad that they're opening the floodgates for new studios to make Star Wars games. We have a better chance of getting good content if more people can take a crack at it. Obviously, Star Wars is kind of back in a big way, and Disney's very much stepping on the gas, so I feel like...
And the funniest thing to me is that, like, everyone's hyped about Star Wars not because of the, like... The trilogy of films that was recently
announced? Not at all,
announced.
No. But I told Casey this today. Usually when Star Wars crashes and burns and then comes back from the grave, you have to wait years, if not decades. But it's kind of cool that we can see, within the span of a year or two, Star Wars die and then come thundering back.
Cyberpunk 2077. She's back in the news, baby. Today, Cyberpunk developer CD Projekt Red issued a statement on their website and on Twitter, a formal apology to players. The statement on their website reads, Dear gamers, we are committed to fixing the bugs and crashes and will continue to work and improve the game via future updates to make sure you are enjoying the game regardless of the platform. If you haven't really heard about this, game is virtually unplayable on base consoles. It runs somewhat fine on next-gen Xbox Series X and S and the PS5, but it was taken off the PlayStation eShop or whatever. So you can't buy it online through PlayStation. It's a whole mess. I am currently waiting to play it. I have it purchased and downloaded on my Xbox, but I'm waiting until, you know, things are a little bit better.
It's a little smoother. I think that makes sense. It's a good call.
Yeah, yeah. So they issued a roadmap with no concrete dates, really, except for years.
That's the
which
one
is...
thing that I want on a roadmap is probably dates.
So it has, like, 2021, it's going to release patch 1.1 and 1.2, which will hopefully address a lot of issues. And then there's a big swatch of time until 2022, and that area is filled with multiple updates and improvements, free DLCs, and free next-gen console upgrades. So, we'll see about that.
One thing I'm maybe a little worried about, not to talk about Cyberpunk for too long, but...
Yeah.
One of the main draws for me about Cyberpunk 2077 was the promise of a future multiplayer mode. In mm-hmm. a similar sense as to Grand Theft Auto V, which is one of the best, if not the best, online experiences for, like, a big game like that. And I was like, mm-hmm. oh, it'd be great to, like, be in the future, and you can look cool, and you can have cars, and shoot each other, and just fuck around. If the game is unplayable, I feel like it's going to be a long way off till we get a multiplayer experience, if we get one at all. And that does kind of bum me out.
2022, late 2022, hell, even 2023. I mean, I know that they're not... So this whole thing is, like, they're just reaffirming that they're committed to fixing the game and continuing it. You see a lot of other developers kind of lose steam on games, like Anthem was one of them. That was BioWare. Hell, even Andromeda by BioWare was the same thing, where they had all these DLCs planned. They did one, and then they killed all of them. And, you know, and so Anthem, apparently they're doing like an Anthem 2.0 update, but that was like a year ago when they announced it. So I doubt that they're ever going to do it again. I don't think they have the interest. I don't think people give a shit. I'm glad that right now they're saying that they want to do stuff. That would suck so much if, like, after all of this, they're like, yeah, we're just going to take the L. They don't really have anything else going on. I know they have another Witcher game in the wings, but it's not, I feel like, 2024, 2025, which is an insane year to think about. Yeah, so that's this your weekly Cyberpunk update.
Future fingers crossed. There's a new Indiana Jones coming. We don't know anything about it, so we're going to talk about it for literally 3 seconds. But it's from Bethesda, specifically from Machine Games, who made Wolfenstein, so I don't know how nutty this game's going to get. It's supposed to be an original story. Again, that's all we really know. Personally, I'm hoping that the Ark of the Covenant, you get possessed by and can just explode Nazis with your hands. That's what I'm hoping for.
And that gives me hope, because Bethesda is another one of those developers that's, like, wildly inconsistent.
Yeah.
And if they're only publishing it, it's pretty sick, because Machine Games Wolfenstein plays like butter. It is so good. And there's a question of, since Bethesda and ZeniMax Studios were bought by Microsoft, this might be an Xbox exclusive. Apparently, rumored, but GTA 6 will have a female protagonist.
So this is a good step. It's a step in the right direction, because I don't know if you remember, but I remember one of the creators of GTA 5 was commenting on why you couldn't play as a woman. It was like, well, being a man is really important to the GTA franchise, because only men like cars and killing and playing games. And I'm like, ooh,
wait, are you kidding me?
What a shitty, crazy thing to say. No, somebody said some shit like that. They reversed that decision, kind of, with the online element. But I'm excited to see, like, what that looks like. This is not how finances work, but just one time. Instead of having a hype train that lasts, like, a year and then the game coming out, how about just randomly one day GTA 6 just drops?
Like a shadow drop, yeah?
No warning. I've watched a lot of TV recently because I like television. But also there were a few things that I needed to catch up on. I'll start with the biggest thing, The Mandalorian. It's like Game of Thrones, but if stuff happened all the time and it was better in almost every way. So the thing about The Mandalorian is it's even better than people say it is, and people will tell you it's the best thing ever. There are giant monsters, there are great characters, there's action in every episode, which is something I thought was impossible because of the way HBO refuses to spend money on things. But nope, they deliver, they give you shit
all
the time.
It's weird, it's almost like some really attractive guy said this in the last podcast episode.
That
someone who's
true.
Just a dynamo hunk said this last time. I don't know who it could be.
It's going to be a mystery that shakes the galaxy for years to come. The thing about The Mandalorian is it's genuine, it's confident, it's emotional, it's fucking incredible. The commitment to blending old school special effects and digital effects is great because they will make the silliest looking monster ever, all the time.
Yeah.
But also,
yeah,
they'll give you ice spiders that just make my skin crawl thinking about them.
They're like, here's a bartender that's an alien that also has a southern accent. Why? Fucking I know. He's from South Tatooine.
And like the commitment to, like, there are times when they show the X-Wings and the interiors look so silly because they look like how they used to look like in the past, but I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I love that commitment, you know?
I know, buddy. It's good.
It's
real
good. It's like the episode where they had to fight on the fucking transport carrying super dynamite, and they're like, we can't go too fast, and he had to take out like 18 different dropships full of people.
Yeah.
It's just...
That's why I'm like waiting for you to watch this fucking show so we can talk about it. God damn it, Shane.
Sorry, it took me so long,
you
but it's
boofy clown.
So fucking good. And I'm honestly, I mean, I'm sure I sounded really excited talking about the new Disney shows in the past, but now I'm that to about 100. Because like, future's fucking bright, man. I watched a couple other things. Gonna talk about them for less time, but still.
Cool.
I watched The Wilds on Amazon Prime, which is kind of, it kind of sold itself as a female Lord of the Flies. And I think Lord of the Flies kind of blows, so I wasn't super excited about it. But then I watched it, and I absolutely loved it. It's one of those things where you don't like anyone in episode one. You're like, oh, these people are so full of themselves and whatever. But then by episode 10, you're like, if anything happens to anyone, I'm going to be furious.
I feel like something happens to them.
Things occur. it's very good. It's very character-driven, and the dialogue is really good. And the people act like people, which I know that sounds like, oh, that should be all shows. But there are shows where they'll drag out shit for impossibly long time and people have drama that doesn't make sense. But in this show, people act like human beings. Like, they forgive each other and they get mad, but then they're like, I'm sorry about that, or this is wild. Can you believe this is happening?
Yeah, it's The Wilds. I can't believe it's happening.
I also watched, and this was a surprise for me. I had a friend recommend it. It's called Ted Lasso on Apple TV. And it's about kind of this American coach who is super into American football and is like, I know this. And they bring him to England to coach soccer. Doesn't know a goddamn thing about soccer. And I'm not a huge sport person, but it's honestly the most wholesome show I may have ever seen in my life. Like, it's so funny. The main character is played by Jason Sudeikis of SNL fame, and he's fucking phenomenal. Like, I'm honestly was blown away. The characters are really good. It's very funny, and it's effortlessly wholesome. In a similar way to The Wilds, people behave like people. Like, they have dimensions, and they take care of each other, and they make fun of each other, and it's good.
Good.
TV's good. It's going to be a good year for TV, I feel.
Hey, there's some wild shit out there. Not just the hit show The Wilds. There's some bananas shit going on out there, y'all. So, stay safe. Love your friends, you know? Let's do that. And watch some TV.
Please watch TV.
If you have a show that you want us to watch on Middle Watch, you want to torture us personally, reach out to our socials at
So reach out to our social media. It's at Out of Dodge Pod on Instagram and Twitter. And any shows that you love or hate, let us know about them, because then we'll watch a little bit of them and then we'll complain about it, and it'll be funny, I hope.
Depends on how bad the show is.
It does depend.
I thought Merlin was going to be a lot worse than it was.
I thought it was going to be so bad, and then it wasn't, and I was honestly like, well, what the hell do I even say?
On this, and on this, and welcome to our video.
Wait, I don't know how to do it.